That's why we're here.
All right, my name's Alec. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for having us, and thank you for making me participate in my recovery day. Yeah, grateful to be here. I could really sum this talk up in 5 minutes and just say I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, I clean up the coffee on Wednesdays, I call my sponsor every now and then on the good times, you know, and I talk to other alcoholics, and everything that revolves around my life goes through another alcoholic before I make a decision. and I do that because my first sponsor that I had made it very clear that I cannot think for myself, because my whole life I thought for myself. And it's landed me in a bunch of places that aren't the best situations. My sobriety day is July 17th, 2019. And, you know, I'm supposed to share like what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And what it was like, and I can sum it up in 60 seconds, is I never really felt a part of, ever. This is my stepfather, but he raised me. So I have my other real dad. He had two other sons. We did not get along at all. They used to gang up on me when I got a little bit older. I used to beat them up. I had to be in a separate room in a garage at my dad's house because we just couldn't get along, right? And then, you know, my stepdad over here had other kids of his own, and so they would come over. I don't really remember the transition. I think I was too young to remember it, but I just remember there was more people involved now. And, you know, I mean, they're my brothers today. Like, we have a really good relationship. But I feel, in my point of view from when that was happening, that I just wasn't their brothers, right? I was just another kid or something like that, you know? So I already had this sense of, like, I don't belong, you know? My dad is a full-blown alcoholic. He's very functioning. He goes to work. You know what I mean? He does his thing. So I was able to drink at his house, right? So when I would be at their house during the week, I go to my dad's, I think, was it every 2 weeks, Saturday? Anyways, I was drinking, right? And I was young. You know, I was a kid. And it was okay there. It was okay there, you know? And can't really recall how many times I did that, but I can recall the first time I did get drunk. It was when my parents were at their meeting on a Tuesday, and my older brother threw a party at the house. And I remember my brother's friends being there, and I remember drinking tall cans, and I remember being absolutely plastered at a very young age. And I got up and went to school the next day, you know. And I remember all of his friends, like, oh my God, like, it was like cool to them, right? And I almost felt like a sense of acceptance at that point. As I got a little bit older, you know, I started experimenting with other things, and that was it. And I ran with that all the way up until my first introduction with Alcoholics Anonymous. Not that I hadn't already knew what it was, because they were already in program when I was a kid, all the way up until, you know, my drinking and using career got progressively worse. and I was 20 years old at the time. I had a broken hand. I just rammed my truck through a Burger King drive-thru. And he said, how about you try to get sober, right? But I didn't have anywhere else to go, right? I was late on rent. Rent was due on the 1st. It was the 19th. The girl that I was living with, not a significant other, she was done with me. She wanted nothing to do with me, and I don't blame her. And so I said, yeah, let's do it, you know. And so I went over to the Loma Linda. There's a BMC over there, and my good friend Andy took me. And I heard the speaker last night, the opening speaker, share about it, but the amount of alcohol I ingested before going into intake and the amount of pills that I took, it was almost like I was okay if I died that day, because I don't even know how I did it with the amount that I took, you know. And I remember doing the intake. I remember, like, I had to stop the lady. I grabbed the trash can. I was throwing up in her office. And she's like, man, you're sick, you know. And I was like, I'll probably die if I don't get into somewhere, you know. And so they loaded me up in an ambulance. And before the ambulance, I went into the bathroom, and I dumped some of my narcotics in my cast, because I still wanted to get high one more time, you know. And so they checked me in. And they're going through the med list, and they're trying to give me Suboxone. They're giving me Trazodone. I was like, oh, I don't need the Suboxone yet, right, because that's going to interfere with my high that I'm trying to get later. And so I refused it for the first couple of days. And when I tell you it was like 2 in the morning and everyone's sleeping and I'm in the bathroom trying to get these pills out, right, and then one falls out, right, and then I'm just, one more time, I'm loaded again, you know. And I did that throughout the whole, pretty much the course. After those ran out, I got on the Suboxone, and then I had the outpatient kid bringing me in edibles with marijuana in it, and I was getting loaded the whole time. When I left there, when it was time for me to leave, I was trying to have one of my friends come and pick me up, and he sent a member of Alcoholics Anonymous to pick me up, because I wanted to get loaded one more time before I went into treatment, you know. And that man picked me up with a carton of cigarettes, and I was very grateful. And that started my journey, my own journey into Alcoholics Anonymous, right, in the 12 steps. And I hate to tell you, I didn't stay sober that time. When I was in that treatment center, I wanted to hang around, you know, the funny guys, the cool guys, right, the people who weren't programming. And so I messed around the whole time I was in there, you know. When I left there, I went to a sober living, and I was probably sober for about a couple months. And then, you know, once again, I was already hanging out with the losers inside treatment, so I was hanging around the losers inside sober living. And he came home one day and said, hey, you got to try these things, dude. Like, they're awesome. They're from the smoke shop. And I kicked off another phenomenon of craving, as it talks about in the book. And I stayed on that, and I stayed loaded for a very long time, and it was justifiable in my own head because I was legally buying it from the smoke shop. I didn't need an ID to buy it. I didn't need anything. It was just over the counter, and so that was fine. And right around that time, I was on my 4th and 5th step, and I had went to the beach with my friend, and we decided to get high again, for real this time, you know. And my justification was like, oh, this is going to help me get through my 5th step, you know. And so we did it, you know. And at that time, I was an assistant manager at a sober living. They got loaded with me. And, yeah, we just kept getting loaded the whole time we were in there. And I eventually became the house manager of that sober living. And I was loaded the whole time. I was kicking people out for getting loaded. When I would run out of money, I would take people's rent money and I'd be like, oh, I'll put it back, right? And, you know, I would get what I needed and I'd put the money. It was like the vicious cycle that I was already used to when I was getting loaded, right? Just this time I had money to steal this time. I didn't have to go looking for it, you know? And cover your ears. I met a female and everything just went downhill. Moved out of sober living really quickly, right? We were going to go off and get married, right? And, you know, I moved out of that sober living, moved in with my brother, and it just didn't work out. And again, very quickly, I found myself loaded again. And it just kept the ball rolling all the way up until 2019. Again, I was covering your ears with another female at this time, and it just, I've been in, like, unhealthy relationships, but this was, like, unhealthy, toxic, and I was, like, thriving in it. Like, I loved it. I loved the chaos. I loved everything that had to do with it, and I just couldn't stop ingesting things that messed up my life, you know? And so one more time, didn't work out. I was finishing up some Caltrans work for the Burger King drive-thru incident, and he took me to court, and he thought I was going to get arrested. I mean, he was like, give me your stuff, you know, and I started handing him my stuff, and then the judge just goes, hey, like, you know, I need you to get this done, right? Like, you're trying to go into treatment, that's great. Get this stuff handled and you can go, you know. And I was so, like, I think I was just so scared of the outcome because the past female, right, like, the route that I went down after that was very scary and it was very dark, you know. And I knew that I didn't want to feel like that again. And I was honestly tired of it. That's what the speaker said last night, and it clicked with me. He was like, you're either tired of it, something happened, or I forget the other thing. And I was just tired of feeling that way, and I was tired of my life, because the same thing happens every single time, you know. And so that was it. I did the Caltrans, and then I went to a sober living, and then I stayed there for a week until I got into treatment, and then I don't know, like, the whole, like, spiritual thing, the God thing, like, for me, when I was in treatment, I was in so much fear. I was just scared. I was just like, oh, my God, like, you know, here I am again, right? Like, I landed myself back here again. And it was just such a blessing. And, like, that whole first year of sobriety was just such a journey, because there was a lot of, like, speed bumps, right, that I caused for myself, right? There was a lot of lows, but there was a lot of highs, you know, and there was a tremendous amount of growth in that first year of sobriety that, like, the only way I was able to get that done was through my higher power, because I couldn't possibly be willing enough to do that on my own. There was just no possible way. So when I was in treatment, I hung around with the winners this time, right? People who were reading the book, you know, in bed at night. We did a 10-step every day. We just read the big book, and, like, we did sober things. We didn't just go to groups, eat food, and play ping pong all night. Like, we programmed, you know. And out of the group that was there, like, a little side note, it's just me and that dude that stayed sober out of, like, 30 people, you know. And he had a sponsor. I had a sponsor. I was constantly calling my sponsor. I was constantly talking about my feelings with my sponsor. I still, to this day, have this big notebook that I used to journal in, because he was like, you should just journal, bro. Even if it's, like, mean stuff, like, even if you just want to cuss on the, like, whatever you want to do, he's like, just write it down in that journal. And I still have that journal, you know. And I haven't, like popped it open in a long time, but I did when we moved houses. And just to see the stuff that I was worried about, like, back then, is just so silly to me. You know what I mean? And when I left there, I went to a sober living, and my sponsor was like, hey, bud, like, just stay here for a year. He's like, let's get you to a year. And I was cool with it. You know what I mean? Told me don't mess around with any females. So I did that after month three. I didn't mess with any females. And I did it, and I was good. You know what I mean? I did what he told me to do. I stayed to myself, and I programmed. I went to meetings. I was going to the gym, right? I was making new friends. I didn't go to any mixed meetings, right? I just went to men's meetings only, unless it was a speaker meeting, because I really wanted to stay sober. I didn't know how to do it. You know what I mean? I didn't know how to do it. That whole first year of sobriety, as I shared earlier, like the ups and downs, like, there was, you know, job loss, job gain, right? One of my good friends hung himself, and AA showed up every single day until I was okay, right? But I say that in the fact of, the only reason AA showed up is because I made myself available to the men in my meeting, right? I called them every day. We were on the phone every day. I drove a box truck for a little bit, and so all I could do was just be on the phone, and it was perfect. It was like everything that I needed in my early sobriety to get me, like, through that, you know, that stuff, you know. Now let's get to the good parts. So right around 9 or 10 months, I was pretty antsy to leave sober living, right? I was going to get an apartment. I had all these big plans. Going back to what I said before I started this, like, I don't know how to think for myself. And my sponsors just said, like, you need to just stay there for a year. There's no rush. You're good. You're fine. And right around my one-year mark, I met my wife. Or she met me. She was staring at me at the gym. And, you know, I was scared to even remotely think about being in any kind of relationship, right? Because I don't know how to be a man. I don't know how to be a boyfriend, right? I don't know how to pay for things. I don't know how to do these things that, like, boyfriends are supposed to do, right? Like, because I've never been one. And, man, it was crazy. It was just crazy. Like, we really started dating, like, at my one-year mark, right? And, like, for me, everything in my sobriety thus far has happened to the T, and it's happened when it was supposed to happen, you know. And before I had met her, I had ran through my steps, right? I had an establishment in Alcoholics Anonymous in my city, you know. I'd been doing the same thing constantly up until that 1-year mark, And I remember calling my sponsor and being like, hey, dude, like, this girl wants to go out. Like, what do I do? And he's like, just have fun. He's like, just be a gentleman, bro. He's like, you know, don't be a dog, you know? And I was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, you made me wait 9 months for this, bro. Like, you know? And I was like, all right, you know? And, you know, we did. And I was respectful to her. And that had been the first time I had been respectful to a woman before. You know what I mean? Not that it was, like, hard, but it was uncomfortable in a sense for me. Like, I felt like, I don't know if I want to do this. I even broke up with her. You know what I mean? I broke up because I was scared. I was like, bro, you're like, you're a grown woman. You have your own house. You have a job. You have a car. I'm driving my dad's car. I don't have a real job. Like, I have no credit. I have $50 in my pocket. This isn't going to work. You know, and I tried not to talk to her for a week. And in that week, I was calling my sponsor 5 minutes.
Ten.
Okay, cool. I have a timer right here, just okay. So I know to shut up. Yeah. I lost my train of thought. Anyways,
$50
in my pocket. Just you have no business being with me at all, right? And then we got back together, and I just feel like Alcoholics Anonymous gave me that opportunity to be somebody for somebody else, you know what I mean? And whether or not that's true or not, that's my belief. And since I've been with her, right, and again, I still continue to do the same thing during the week unless work comes up, I've been able to put together a pretty awesome life, you know what I mean? And my current sponsor now, my second sponsor, always likes to install in me, like, everything that I have today and everything that I get to do today is a byproduct of Alcoholics Anonymous. Had I not chose to get sober, right, I don't know where my life would be, and it'd be kind of, like, terrifying to even think about where my life would be, right, because I still have friends that I used to get loaded with still doing the same thing. They're drinking beer in the garage, they're smoking weed, they're partying, they're doing other things. And, like, for me, I have no interest in that at all. Not a single interest, right? And for me, that's a God shot, right? Because for an alcoholic like me, I love to stay loaded. I love to stay drunk. I love to do, like, messed up things to people. And that was my normality for a very long time, you know. So for me to be able to stand up here on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock and share this is definitely a byproduct of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I've literally, since I've, like I said, like, everything that's happened in my sobriety thus far is like boom, boom, boom. Like, I've done nothing but, like, go up, right? And I've had setbacks, and I've had you know, trials and tribulations to where, like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? But I always fall back on Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter what. Like, no matter what, you know. I think 2 years ago, I was doing unethical things to make money in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I wasn't selling drugs, so don't please don't get offended. But I was doing things selfishly to earn money, right? And I remember I had tried to start a company, and I remember not being able to focus on something that I love to do because this was bringing in this kind of money, right? And once again, I fell back on Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I made a decision with my sponsor that I was going to, you know, drop this and do what I love to do, and maybe it'll work out, you know? And for me, fear has been such a big part of my life, right? I've been fearful of everything. So you can imagine letting go of basically what was a full-time job, right, to not knowing if this is going to work, the amount of fear that I had was crazy, right? But I stayed on the phone with my sponsor. I called my sponsor. I was in meetings. I shared about what I was going through. And I was able to, I was able to put together a good life. You know what I mean? I'm a husband today, right? There's no way you would have told me 5 years ago, you're going to get married, you're going to be a husband, you're going to be a business owner, you're going to have a kid, all that stuff. Like, there's absolutely no possible way, right? But it's a byproduct of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, hands down, no matter what, the 12 steps, just, even when I'm just in a room like this right here, whether you're alcoholic or Al-Anon, like, I'm okay. I feel okay. You guys are my people. Like, I don't feel, like, I can't walk up to a stranger and just share what I just shared and expect them to be like, oh my God, like, great. They'd be like, what the hell's wrong with you? You know? What are you doing? You know? And it makes me really grateful. You know what I mean? I've been cleaning up the coffee at my Wednesday night meeting for 4 years. And when I was given that commitment, some of the old timers were like, you are not allowed to drink on Wednesday nights. And that's all he told me. He's like, don't drink on Wednesday nights. We need you here to clean up the coffee. And just a God shot, man. Like, they just kept re-electing me every single year. Like, bam, 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 bam. And it's because I clean up the coffee good, right? I don't know. And, you know, at my men's meeting, I sit around almost over 100 years of sobriety, right? There's an old-timer to the left, old-timer to the right, and then there's a row of old-timers right there. And you know, if I'm not paying attention or I'm messing around, I get a little pat on the back, like, read your book. You know what I mean? You need to do this. You need to do that. And I've had the pleasure the past 2 years of sitting next to a good friend of mine. And I tell him all the time, or I try to tell him as much as I can, like, I'm so grateful that you started sitting over here, because he used to sit all the way in the corner. And I've always looked up to him, because he's been doing the same thing for almost 40 years. You know what I mean? Goes to the meetings every week. He calls a sponsor. He sponsors guys. He does X, Y, and Z. And, you know, for me, I love when I share about, like, the attraction part, right? Like, I don't care what kind of car you drive. I don't care if you know what I mean? I don't care about any of that stuff. I care that, you know, you've had the same wife, the same job, right? And, like, if you make mistakes, like, you go back and you fix it. Because for me, like, I'm real quick to do something that I shouldn't and then just keep on walking like nothing ever happened, you know? And then now my side of the street's not very clean, you know? And I've been taught to do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's been lovely. I got about 3 minutes, so I will. Also, I forgot to formally apologize to the group. I do have to leave exactly when I'm done speaking. I have business to attend to. But, you know, I honestly am so grateful that I get to be 2 hours away from my house, right? Speak, and then be able to drive 2 hours back and to get back to, like, doing what I love to do. You know what I mean? And that's literally because I listen to people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I have to. You know what I mean? This has been, so far, the best 5.5 years of my life-ish. You know what I mean? I can't even express, like, the gratitude that I have towards, like, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? And I wish that anybody that, you know, is struggling and doing all, I wish that they can at least be in my shoes for one day to see that, like, it's possible, you know? Unfortunately, that's not how it works. You know what I mean? I am sponsoring this kid right now, and I'll wrap it up with this. And my first sponsor told me, he said, when you get the opportunity to sponsor somebody, they're probably going to be like you. You know, and it turns out to be pretty identical, you know. And, he doesn't want to take direction, right? And I know that I share that I take direction, I do all that. I always took the direction, but I always fought it for a little bit, you know what I mean? And it's just crazy, like, we ran through it, we're on his amends part, but we got, you know, to the meat and potatoes of, you know, the steps. And just the stuff that he shared with me, I could tell it was something he didn't want to share with me, and I started getting goosebumps. I started, like, not laughing, but, like, tearing up laughing, because I'm like, dang, dude, like, I was in your spot. I remember sharing my fourth and fifth step with my sponsor in his car at a lake, and I remember dumping all this stuff on him and then, like, just started crying all over his big book. You know what I mean? And, like, he just said, like, dude, you have a chance, you know? And I really believe that the way that I did my fourth and fifth step really set me up for success for the rest of my sobriety, you know, because at that point I was already willing to make amends, right? Made all my financial amends, took care of all that stuff. And then, you know, I continuously, if I'm wrong, I do go back and make it right. And then, you know, my spirituality and then, you know, helping other people stay sober is just something that keeps me sober every day, you know. So thank you guys for having us. And thank you guys.
Alec, I just want to thank you so much. When Kathy and I first heard them, We asked if they could speak as a family meeting. It was going to be the week before your wedding, so we gave you a pass. So thank you for coming back.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Is Don coming back? Yeah. Okay. Oh, there he is. Okay. Don, I thought I was going to have to tell your story. And our next speaker is Don.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, I can stuff it. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 19th, 2001. Wow. Family recovery. I told you I'm an alcoholic. I got a sponsor. I've worked the steps. I'm in the steps. I got a couple sponsees. I have a home group. I've never lost any of those. If I ever lose one of those, I get loaded. So I keep those things around. I got an Al-Anon. Oh my God. I'm just overtaken by the gratitude, you know. The alcoholism that runs through our family.
Let it out, man.
It was deep. It was deep. The kid that walked out of here, I counted five times he was dead. And those are five times she don't even know about. Here's the deal. First of all, oh my God, I just can't believe it. I drank, I got drunk, and I didn't know how to stop. And from 8th grade till about 28, I got here when I was 38, so I'm saved 28. We're on a short time leash, but I ran through every person, every family member, every funding, every wife, kid, grandma, whatever I stole from. I'm a taker, okay? I can never give back to Alcoholics Anonymous, Mr. Al-Anon, what you've given me in my life. So let's wrap up what it used to be like. What happened was people quit giving it to me. Okay? I'm the first grandson of two grandmothers that loved and endured me to death. To death. And I stole from both of them. Okay? I got extradited out of the state of Oklahoma. And the reason I got extradited and I'm not in prison is because of that grandma and that name. Okay? let's get sober. I have boys. I have five boys. We don't have steps or whatever. He's not my biological son, but he's one of my sons. And we actually moved in together when we were three. Was he three? He was five. And he's dead right. He's dead right. You know what's so hard to swallow? Is everything he said was dead. He was dead to the point on with everything. We have five boys. She'll tell the story. We broke up, we got back together, we broke up, blah, 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 and then we got back, God gave us a shot again, and we grabbed the boys, and we crammed them in a house, and we were happy, and they weren't. That's the bottom line. I mean, we're finally getting to the truth, you know, and we were doing AA, I was doing AA, and she was doing Al-Anon, kinda. We were going to meetings, but we weren't bringing home spirituality. We were going to meetings and say, don't drink no matter what. And we were grabbing our kid by the face and fucking learn how to throw the fastball. You know what I mean? So, so we got, that's kind of the nutshell. And then it got better. And then sponsorship. I've never been without a sponsor. The guy that got me sober 5 years in decided he was going to quit. I went the next week and got a sponsor. I didn't shop for him. I didn't look for him. I was just following your direction. It said, you got to have a sponsor. So I got another guy. I rode him for about 10 years, and then I got another guy. And you know what? I've always had someone to call. Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon and family groups, there's always someone to call if you're willing to pick up the phone. You know, what happens is we feel like we got all the answers. And so we got sober. The kids, we got five boys, they've all graduated. Okay? Miracle. Listen, I wish I could tell you how to part in that. I was a part of the ride. I was a part of the ride. You know? The backbone, the matriarch of our family is up next. Now, I'm not trying to put her on the spot, but at the end of the day, we're driving and we've had some bumps. You know, we've had back surgery and da-da. We're driving and man, my wife, she don't stop. Man, I had back surgery. I'd be milking that mother for 2 years. I ain't going to AA. I don't got to do that. I mean, you know, I'm the typical alcoholic. You give me an inch, I'm going to make it work all the way to the other side. You know what I mean? And we were just driving, and you know, one of my many stops. You know, I'm not gonna go back, but you know, back when I was running and gunning, back in the '70s, you could run into rehab, hide out, go back to court, get out of jail, done. I was up here at Cass State. I didn't remember that. She did. Okay, they don't forget. You know, I know we're running a little short today and everything, but we can write a whole book on the stuff that's not in the book. It's about Alan. She's always been by my side, ride or die. You know? I just know how grateful she is that one of her sons is doing the program the right way today. Now, we'll say it every day. We go home and we had our beds tonight. We say it for today. Man, you stick around, you go watch our life. Shit happens, man, in a 24-hour increment. What that kid's not telling you is he got married, sober. What he didn't tell you is he's having a baby, sober. What he's not telling you is he's a workaholic and he's fearful of failing, sober. What he's not telling, dude, it was like I had to lay it down. Listen to me. Whatever you got to do, you got to make this happen. Because, like, this is a big deal to your mom, and the rewards you will get out of this. He's on his way to cook. His business has blown up. It's like, not. I mean, Christmas, we're booking Christmas now. Like, do we get an hour at Christmas? Like, no matter what, he works. And he's obsessed with working because he's afraid to fail. I talk to him every day. Every day. I work about 4 miles from his house. And he's working. He's turned his house into a kitchen. Tell him that's just going to stop once that baby gets here. But, you know, you keep rolling, bro. You roll as long as you can, bro. But, I mean, sooner or later, I mean, we're going to, you know, anyway, enough on him. But we got sober. We got married. Family recovery. She went to Al-Anon. You know, I'm a thief. I've told you I'm a thief. Somebody said that the wife's got to go to Al-Anon for you to make it. So, like, I take what I want and I leave the rest. And I came home and told her she needed to go to Al-Anon. And she did. And she stayed. Okay? That's a true story. That's what happened. She didn't go willingly. I didn't go willingly. She got involved with some people and started putting some examples into our life that were non-negotiable. And one of them was touching the kids. One of them is mind-altering chemicals. Nothing from the neck up. That's sobriety in our house. I know we're out here in Santa Clarita. I know it's 2024 and we're changing the vocabulary and all that. I mean, I know it's California. But in my house, my 20 minutes, nothing from the neck up. No mushrooms, no funny candy, no gummy bears, no funny leaves, no meditation in the mushroom grove, none of that shit. You want to get real, you go to the gym, you do a 12-step, hit your knees, you go to the gym, you go home, say you're sorry. That's my recovery. All right, now, I was talking to my son last night, and the big book says we do not give advice. That we are not on a spiritual moral high top. It also says selfless and self-centered and driven by hundreds of forms of fear. Fear is a great motivator. It's okay to be a little scared. I'm a little sick in some areas, but I like a little fear. It brings out the best in you. You know, fear of what? Somewhere in the last year or two, man, the word God is everything or God is nothing has stuck in my brain. Now listen to me. I'm just this bread on this sandwich you're getting today. You got the bread. You got some spread. The beef's coming. All right, the recovery between that you've just seen in my life, those are direct results of the program. Alcoholics Anonymous at Al-Anon. Lately, I've been doing a lot more Al-Anon because my wife's had a couple of medical issues. And she freaking overcommits. She's chairman and super chair. And I'd like to thank my friends for coming out from Corona this morning, getting up, having a cup of coffee. First of all, I'd like to thank you for spending time with each other so you can have some time and go back home, because that's the gift. You don't get it sitting at home. I don't get it on Zoom. I didn't drink on Zoom. I'm sorry. And I'm really old school, redneck, old fashioned man. See, this is what I wore to my high school prom. Finally, they got some shoes that don't hurt my feet. But I'm real rigid. Okay? And I have to learn to be flexible. Most importantly, I have to learn to let God in. Okay? Now, we spoke with 500 people. We spoke with half the room women and bilinguals. Or not bilinguals. Deaf. Dude, we spoke with, 20 people? It's the same message. It's the same deal. Do you know what I mean? Whenever me and my wife load up the car to go do 12-step weekend, dude, there's always obstacles. Like, man, and I'm always like, let's just cancel. I'm always looking at the easier side. I don't know about you, but I'm looking for the easier, softer way. Less damage, less financial, less this, less wear and tear, you know, boom. I don't have to waste my cleaning. My cleaning's still in the... I don't have to pay for another cleaning. You know, my wife's off now. We came to Al-Anon, and I'm going to tell you, in the last 10 years, I really got to know my wife. The same lady I've known since she's 14 years old. I didn't know that lady. You know, since COVID and our car accidents and our stuff, there's no one left. It's me and her. You know, and I get this little shithead, little voices in my head. Do you have voices? I get voices. You know, I listen to Kid Rock and he talks to me. You know what I mean? I listen to my mother and she talks to me. I listen to my wife and she talks to me. And then I listen to my head and then I say, just do the right thing. Do you know what I'm saying? We're always, I'm very open with my sponsors. There's not a lot of confidence yet, or what do you call it? There's not a lot of anonymity with my sponsors. I got 7 of them. They've been around. If a new one, I gradually move them into the family circle. But most of my sponsors know I'm on speaker. And most of them know my wife's not real far away. All right? I mean, that's how it is. She knows my guys. They know her. They love her. She loves them. If one of them starts flaring up, she says, he's tripping. I was talking to one this morning. Been with me for 17 years. Started telling me about some stuff. I put him on speaker, and I'm thinking I got to shave twice as much as I used to. I don't know what it is, but the white is coming out and grows. You know what I mean? So my wife's big on that. She's like, so I was, I shaved, and I was cooling off, and he was rattling. And she came in and looked at me like, you got to go, you got to speak. And I told him what was going on. And the biggest gift I get to do is listen to another alcoholic. Stop my busy, self-centered life and listen and give back. Do you know what I'm saying? He's got a birthday coming up. And it's a big deal. Because he's one of those ones, and the one that left here. And there's some stuff that goes along with being in recovery. Recovery means you can't cut your Cadillac converter off and turn it into the insurance because it's bad. Everyone else does it, but we can't do it in AA because it's lying. Tax man, gotta like, come on, he's everyone lies to the tax man. lying. It's like murder now that you're in AA. Lying is like murder. You know what I mean? But we try to practice these principles in all our affairs. I couldn't tell you how grateful I am to watch my son. I can't tell you how grateful I am to sit in the front row and watch it work. He's going to give us our 13th? 12th grandchild. We got 12 grandkids. Those five boys and four daughter-in-laws have went off and just... You know, our friend's got 2, 3... I mean, I'm sorry, sports fans, but, you know, we have 12. And every one of them think that they're the first one. No one gets more excited about the grandchildren than she does. It's like a national holiday. God doesn't make, you know what I mean? And after 12 of them, I need to know the routine. 10 minutes to go. I used to be like, what happened? What's going on now? This young lady came into our lives and he's calling me. He's like, who's this redhead at the gym, bro? He's checking me out. I'm like, bro, you got to get to a year. No relationships first year. Take that home to your people. Why? You don't know who you are. 1 year, you don't know who you are. You might get rid of one that you wanted to keep. You might keep one that you might want to get rid of. Don't sell yourself short. You know, he went to AA. He was dead 5 times. I seen him in the back of a police car. He had long hair. And he drove his truck off the 15 freeway, down the Burger King embankment, and crashed into a tree. It was national news in Norco. We're from Norco. Norco's not real big, okay? He got about a 5 mile square. What's going down in Norco, it's probably in Boston. You know, back, that's how it was back in the day. So, you know, if there was a fight or a mistake or a party or something, OX is probably involved in it somewhere. My other kid was moving in and we got the word that this one drove his truck off into Burger King thing. He was arrested in the back of the police car and his hair was hanging down. He put his head up and the police officer and he looked at me and goes, I don't know that man. I was trying to get him out of jail. He goes, I don't know that man. That's how high he was. And I had to tell my wife when she came home from work. Yeah, the good and the bad about being me. It's kind of like the movie, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Is I cannot not tell her. We don't have secrets. She came in the other night. She had so many secrets. She said, "Oh, I can't tell. Ooh, I'm gonna." I go, "We can't do that. You gotta promise. You gotta promise. I'm not gonna promise. Either no promise is done." She told me what it was. It's not that big of a deal. Do you understand? But the problem is we don't keep secrets. We don't lie to each other. We shoot up and show up. Okay? Great. Like, man, what a good little convention. You know, like I said, we've been to big ones, little ones, middle ones, ones we were okay with. I mean, it's always good for us, for our mental, physical, spiritual. We seen the women with children last night. There was girls running in. My son was looking, playing with the girls' hair. There's newcomers. The gift is to come back next year. The newcomers got a year. You know what I mean? The magic. There's magic. I don't know what it is. It's never been better in my life. I've lost my mother. My brother and sister don't speak to me. I'm the black sheep. I've always been the black sheep. I've tried to make the amends, but I got Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm able to be a husband today. I'm able to be employed. I get to go talk to, who is it? CalPERS next Monday. They called me. They said, you got to make some arrangements. You're 60. I'm like, shut the front door. Really? You know what I mean? I haven't screwed that up. Got an evaluation from my boss when I was gone. I didn't have to go do the evaluation. She said, I'll email it to you. Just sign. You got all exceptions. Do you know what I mean? And so, like, not to say that I'm going to rest on my laurels, but that motivates me. But Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to be employed. They taught me to pay the rent. You pay the rent. She's going to tell you about the rent here next hour. You pay the rent. Do you know what I mean? I used to take her money and we didn't pay rent. So then we had to move. We had to start all over again. Alcoholics Anonymous is the end of it. You pay the car tax. I know that doesn't mean steal the neighbors. That means go and give them $375 and they give you a little tag. And every time I do that, I go, it was so easier when I was a teen. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, the tags are due. You pull into a grocery store and, you know, you're like, done. And you drive around. I'm 60 years old. Trust me, I wasn't supposed to be here. I'm one of the lucky ones. Bill and Bob, I'm going to say this to you, man. The legacy of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the reasons I stayed doing this is because I got 13 grandkids. You know it's coming. You know it's coming. All right? And I see these guys. And I see these grandpas and I see the grandkids. Because the kids, they don't like us. They don't want to hear us. They don't want to do us. They don't want to be like us. Squares. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. The grandkids, they're coming. They're going to double down. They're going to come back. They're not going to have nowhere to go. They're going to call who? They're going to call grandpa. They're going to call grandma. Because they're going to be mad at mom and dad. They're going to be mad at them. I'm going to call my grandpa. I'm going to call my grandma. See, and then there's that 18 number. Once you turn 18, that's it, you know. I'm a happy people pleaser. I want you all to be happy. I want you to be happy. I want you to be happy. I want you to be happy. And I'm okay not being happy if you're happy. I got issues. Do you understand? I do. And, you know, I am so sorry I'm all over the map today. I had no idea watching him this time around was so emotional on me. You know, the next time we speak, he's not going to run out of room. I sold him on this one. Next time he's got to stay and he's got to endure this shit like I do endure on him. My sobriety date is July 19th of 2001. His is July 17th. So there's a lot more, you know, and he's Hispanic and I'm white. And the biggest fight we ever got in was he put a Mexican flag up in my garage. And he wanted to represent his heritage. And I was so naive and so blinded by his feelings, I made a big deal about it. The beginning of the year, my best friend had me, we drove to Cabo. He bought a new truck and he was moving home and me and my buddy in AA drove to Mexico and he called and said, grab me the flag you tore down the day before and bring it home. You know? Hey, listen, man, I hope you guys have a great weekend. I appreciate you letting me participate in my recovery. And stick around. It's going to get really good, really fast.
If you want to know a reason to be in service in this program, there is no way Lisa, who lives in Norco, and I, who live in Ventura, would have ever met each other. And we have the honor and privilege of serving on many, many conventions together. And we're just going to love Lisa like we all do. And here's Lisa.
Is it supposed to? Is it fine like that?
That?
Or do you want it covered up?
Yeah.
No, it should still pick up. But
I know Alec was flipping it earlier. I'm like, oh, Lord have mercy. I can still hear my first sponsor saying they're not a reflection of you, and me saying, the hell they're not. And then the things I hated when I was new in this program. Good morning. My name is Lisa. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. It is a gift and a pleasure. Thank you so much, Kathy and Lynn, for asking us again. Yes, I did tell that boy that left here, you might want to call your sponsor on that because you're not saying no this time. We get to participate in our recovery today, and, you know, sometimes I probably should say no with the amount of commitment that I say yes to. But, you know, I said it in my chairman letter, you know, being the AFG chairman this past year. Man, there's no amount of money. No amount of anything that could give me the life that I have today because of Al-Anon. And so the only way I do is give back. And I love every minute of it. You know, I know that I always get super nervous when I speak, and I, you know, I remember my first sponsor telling me, you know, you're going to get up there and you're going to speak, whether it's 5 people, whether it's 250 people, and you're there for yourself and one other person. So if anything that me or my family has shared today that has touched someone, then we've been of service to God in our programs, and that I am grateful for. You know, what it was like, I'm going to thank Jared, and where did Jared go?
He go.
Thank you for coming and driving all this way to support us. You know, I always let everybody know what's going on in my life and my chain of sponsorship and his too. And, you know, I always like to have accountability. It's just, you know, it's what I was taught since I was new and being accountable. Prior to program, I wasn't accountable. Prior to program, I ran my own show. I did my own thing, covered up for the alcoholic, stole for the alcoholic, did everything for the alcoholic because I didn't know any better. And for some reason, the piece of literature that you read this morning, I don't know that I've read that. I've always read the open letter to the alcoholic, but I don't think I've read that. Whether that's just not been in meetings, the pamphlet, I don't know, but man, that ripped my heart. I could feel my heart just like, oh my God. You know, Sam said it last night, you don't know the difference in having a child in this disease versus all your other loved ones is, I can't even tell you. But for the grace of God, his smart mouth telling me that if I'm going to run with you, you're going to run with me, you got to go to Al-Anon, that I did, just to spite him. but for the grace of God, I stayed. Because there's no way with these boys that I would have made it without it. Especially that one. Our oldest one that, you know, gave us a run for our money, he's a lot more street smart than this one was, and not that we didn't worry about that one too, the other one is such a raging blackout drunk, man. Anyways, I'm not going to be able to tell it all, so I'm going to do this real quick. What happened, what it was like, what it's like today. I met him at 14 in high school, and I fell in love with him immediately, absolutely immediately. We were just friends. He didn't like me in the way that I liked him. And fast forward a little bit, you know, he played football, I was a song leader, we went to Ontario High School, and I was going to practice, and I strutted my stuff across the football field, and my little dolphin shorts, and I got rid of the glasses, and got contacts, and I developed a little bit, and I watched him walk across that football field, and our journey started from there. I was somebody he was attracted to, along with a lot of other females from all the other high schools around. I was still one of them. And, you know, that's just part of the journey with alcoholism. You know, he had already kicked off his addiction in high school, but I didn't know anything about that. You know, fast forward, we graduated. I got pregnant with our older son. I gave him an ultimatum to marry me before our son was a year. We went to Las Vegas. My family hated his guts. They weren't at our wedding in Vegas. I had some friends and his mom and family. I begged him not to use, drink the whole can. Just one. Just for this 24-hour period, 48, can you not drink, can you not use? He had money that he inherited, we went over there with $10,000 to Vegas. The best man, the maid of honor, my best friend, maid of honor, his best man, the best man and the groom barely made it to the wedding because they were up all night partying and drinking, and he had blown that $10,000 in that 24-hour period before I got married. And I had to write a hot check to get us home. That's how our journey when we got married the first time started. Some of you know my summary, some of you don't. This is my first and my second husband. I've only been married twice. I remember in a meeting sharing about getting married to him, and this newcomer came up and goes, Why would you marry him again? And I just said, you know what, sweetheart, just keep coming back. More shall be revealed. You know what, I was always in love with him. But what I wasn't in love with was the drug addiction and the alcoholism and the destruction. And, you know, I've done a couple four steps with a few sponsors. And, you know, the destruction, the violence when we were married the first time, you know, he contributed to that. And most definitely once my husband started drinking, then the outside substances would kick in and he would be gone for days. You know, and I'm at home, you know, taking care of our son by ourselves. I'm the one working still. I'm the one, you know, I had to make sure that I paid rent and bills before he would, you know, he knew when I got paid before the money. It was just this juggle all the time. But the minute he would come home from being on a run, it was on. I mean, I was waiting for him, and it was ugly. It was ugly. Most of the violence and the destruction, holes in walls, all of that was a direct result of my rage and anger. I rage to alcoholism. I'm furious with alcoholism. I am not a suicidal Al-Anon. I'm more of a homicidal Al-Anon. I am very much ready to fight, ready to whatever. I mean, it didn't matter that he was drunk or loaded. You know, don't fight with a drunk. Don't fight when they're loaded. You know, that isn't me. I'm not afraid. I am not afraid. The rage that comes over me, I become someone that I don't know. And the destruction that was left behind in most of those homes is a result of my actions and my reaction to alcoholism, not his. My oldest has a scar above his eye. As at Christmas, he came home drunk, and we started. The minute he came in the door, there I go, and we're fighting, and he tripped over wrapping paper and hit his head on the corner. He was one. You know, our home, we are loud, violent, rageful people. We don't know how to do things quietly, even in sobriety sometimes, not quietly. We definitely don't go out to dinner with all of the family anymore. There's too many of us now. But even when we were in program and we go out to dinner with the boys for one of their birthdays, he would be at one end of the table and I'd be at the other end of the table. And once the boys started talking shit, it was like, where's the check? We gotta go. Because they would fight. You know, I remember a Thanksgiving. I had some Al-Anon people over in sobriety, and they're out in the street. The boys are doing just fine playing football. This guy decides he's going to play football with them, and before you know it, shirts are off, screaming, yelling, and this friend of mine's like literally in awe looking at all, you know, him and five boys just going at it. And I looked at her and said, you thought I was lying in the shit I told you at the meeting. I'm not lying. This is my family. And they're my family, and I love them dearly. And because of this program, I have relationships with all of them. And they're definitely not perfect. They're definitely not what I want them to be. You know, before Al-Anon and Tools, you know, I made decisions that were not good decisions. And they harmed my children. It breaks my heart to hear him when he shares about not feeling a part of. It hurts. But you know what? We've all done things in this program that we're not proud of. And we have all done things that harmed our loved ones. I never harmed them. Let me take that back. I think twice. He got hit once because he called me a name that wasn't, you know, and I laid him out on the floor in the garage. And our oldest one, I think, called me the lovely C word in the car, and he got my left hand hook and kicked him out of the car. So there have been a couple times, but most of it was emotional harm that I caused my children. And, you know, I know today that that's not the woman that I am. I don't hold that guilt anymore. It definitely still, like, grabs at my heart when I hear him share. But, you know, anyways, I'm going to get forward here. You know, I got to Al-Anon and I wasn't all hop, skip, and a jump. I hated all the slogans. I hated everything that you guys had to say. Absolutely. I wasn't like, yay, how do I do this? What do I do? I just knew that after a big, huge fight with him after the holidays, and he's sober, and we're raging, fighting in the kitchen, and I threw a Pyrex dish at his head, and it put a hole in the wall, and I felt like all the blood drained out of me. I'm like, how did everything that we went through years and years ago when we were married the first time come back that quick in a heartbeat? You know, and I went to a Sunday night meeting, and I talked to the woman that I ended up asking to be my sponsor, and she said, you've always been affected by alcoholism. You just didn't know any better, and you shoved it all down all those years. So this fight that was just like the ones you guys had years ago, that's what brought it back that quick. And so, you know, like I said, I didn't, I think I argued everything with my sponsor. I wanted to know why, you know, why do I have to do this? Why doesn't he have to do this? Why is it always about what I got to do? Why is it, you know, just on and on and on. You know, and when my sponsor got so tired of that with me, she finally said, God, Lisa, your life can't get any worse than it already is. Can you just try one thing? Just start with one. And I'm like, okay. So I started with one. I took a commitment in a meeting. And then it went from there. Then it went to, you know how it goes. Then you just, you know, it just goes. And, you know, I started working with others. I started working the steps. You know, I have always been involved in services ever since I've been in this program. And I don't know that I'll ever stop. You know, I didn't know that I was going to be okay doing this today. I'm 8 weeks post spinal fusion surgery, and I had no idea that I was going to have it when they asked. But I knew I wasn't going to not miss what gives me the life that I have today. Anyways, fast forward. You know, it was the first time that I had an understanding of what the alcoholics go through, and it was the first time that I had really that compassion for the alcoholic. Is he's out in the garage, he's newly sober. He was 2.5 years sober when we got back together, and then he relapsed. So, you know, I just turned 23 this past January, and he turned 23 in July, and that's the reason I came first and how that all worked. He was out in the garage. He wasn't coming, watching TV, you know. I'm thinking he's sober in my head, you know, that normal life you should have when they're sober, not. Sometimes things have been worse in sobriety sometimes than in the disease. But I couldn't understand. He was always in the garage, and it was driving me crazy. And I called my sponsor, and she's like, well, if you want him, you know, go in the garage. I go, no, he needs to come in, yada, yada. I'm like, fine. So I go in the garage. We're talking, and he's messing with things. See, because when he used to use, he'd tweak in the garage. So I didn't like that whole go in the garage kind of thing. But at midnight, he looked at his watch and said, oh, cool, I got another day. And he'd shut it down and go to bed. And it was that aha moment of, he's not out there to piss me off, I mean, which is what my head's telling me. He's out there keeping his hands and his feet moving, so he's not out there drinking and using. And after that, it isn't that I still was like, you know, about everything, but I got a little bit better, and I started taking more direction. And, you know, I'm grateful for the foundation that I had when I was new, because if I would have had more of the softer touch kind of way, I probably wouldn't have stayed. I needed it the way I needed it, and I'm forever grateful for it. You know, the boys, real quick, you know, we have an amazing marriage today, and we only have that because of what we do. You know, driving up here, even before we left, you know, my husband's a rager. We had lots of raging, ugly fights in sobriety and in, you know, me and program. For a long time, I wouldn't let him drive because he'd go to dirt roads and spin out and fight ugly. It was horrible. I almost left him on the 10 freeway one time in recovery. Took us a little bit
early
to kind of calm down. Yeah. But he does this when he gets upset or he's frustrated. It's just that breathing. Oh, and when I hear it, it's almost like drives me crazy. Like, you know, when we hear, I still kind of cringe when people are opening Coke cans. You know what I mean? He still drinks soda alcoholically. I mean, he just downs it, you know. He mixes this stuff before he goes to the gym, and I watch him, and it's a shot of, I don't know, apple cider. It's all kinds of stuff that he mixes, and it's like, I told him the other day, I go, you're such an alcoholic. Like, it's supposed to be just a protein drink before you go to the gym. That's all it's supposed to be. He's got to add everything else in it, just like an alcoholic. I mean, everything is still in sobriety, he does alcoholically. And we laugh about it today. It took me a while to get there. But, you know, he's doing that huffing and puffing, and I'm like, man, we got a two-hour ride. I just, you know, sometimes I got to speak up, like, is there something we need to talk about before we get going here? Because I don't want him driving all pissed off like that. Because it's not good, you know. And I definitely speak up way differently than I used to, but there are non-negotiables with me, and there are things that I still stand for. And, you know, we live in a home of recovery today. I have beautiful dishes in my kitchen cabinet. I have silverware in the drawer today. I'm not, you know, I don't have pictures on walls covering up holes for me and my raging anger of alcoholism. And it's non-negotiable in my home, period. And it's been like that ever since I got into program and with the boys, and that's where I'm going to get to. You know, 3 out of the 5 boys are alcoholic addicts, so this one's the only one that's doing the deal today. The first one, you know, he did recovery for a long time, did it well. You know, him and a couple of other young people started young people in AA out in Corona. You know, he was really involved with IKIPA and all that stuff. And then now he's not, and now there's his wife, and he has, you know, when you're reading the part about grandkids, you know, I don't know what they're doing, but, and I worry about them, but I'm more worried about my grandkids. And it's super hard. I'm like, to my sponsor the other day, I said, you know, I'm letting go. I had to let go of kids. Now I got to let go of grandkids. I'm like, you're killing me here with this shit. I love when my sponsor always says, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? And, you know, my first time she said that to me, I said, well, I think I should deserve to have both, really. You know, like, I don't think I should have to choose. Because I'm always right, don't you know that? you know, the journey with these boys has been a journey beyond anything that I ever, pain-wise, that journey of pain and a parent with children out in the streets. And not knowing if they're alive or dead. Not knowing that phone call from that unknown number that pops up, who is that? Who's calling me to tell me something bad? Because I always thought it was something bad. Or it was one of them one more time giving me some BS story, the reason they needed money. For a long time, I didn't answer my phone because I just couldn't. Because I hadn't built up the strength enough yet to be able to tell them no. And then it got to the point that I no longer wanted to watch my children kill themselves in front of me. And I had to work through a lot of writing with a sponsor. I had to work through a lot of, you know, praying and a lot of realizing the first time really knowing that I'm absolutely powerless over the disease of alcoholism and there's absolutely nothing I can do to get them to stop. I have sponsored a lot of parents in this program, and I have watched other parents wipe themselves out financially. One more time, another rehab. One more time, another sober living. And one more time, one more time, one more time. And they're broke. And their kid's not sober still. Because I know today that nobody in our life is going to get sober until they're ready to get sober. And there's absolutely nothing that I can do to stop that. And when I realized that, that's when my program started getting a little bit stronger with them. And my, you know, he wanted to always bring them home. And I think after one time kicking them out, we let them all come back home one time. And after that, I mean, I've got one dealing drugs with remote controls, you know, getting... pulling up and Don and the our son's going out and grabbing a remote control and a game out of there, you know, and we're like, what is going on? He, I know exactly what's going on. He is like, what's that? Oh, so and so, you know, it's a new game we're gonna play later on. Mm-hmm. When we kicked him, because him and the other one were living with us at the time, and when they both had a big fight and they got kicked out for the last time. And he went to go clean out the room. And I said, open those controllers. Open those games. Some of them had drugs in it, but some of them didn't, but you could smell it, especially with the weed. You know, he always, you know, they're just little boys. That's what he used to say to me. They're just little boys. You know, this one right here, he got lost in Vegas. I didn't know about, I'm sure there's other things I don't, and I used to tell him all the time, please don't tell me I don't want to know. Please don't tell me I don't want to know. I told sponsees that. Please try to pick up the phone before you wreck yourself. Because once you, I had one that she didn't call me till the next day and went looking for her daughter and found her at a strip joint stripping, and she was mortified the next morning, and I said, sweetheart, did you at some point think of calling me? I mean, there was more to the story. And she said, yeah, my daughter said something about that, but, you know, she was just in the fit of, I got to fix her, I got to save her. And I said, you know what, honey, I can now not help you get that image out of your mind. That's why we say, pick up the phone before you wreck yourself. Because we don't have all the answers, but we're going to help you calm down and reason things out that maybe you'll make a different decision. Maybe you'll think about, do you want that visual for the rest of your life? If that's the last time you see your daughter, is that the visual you want to see? You know, so I didn't want to see a lot of stuff, and I didn't want to hear a lot of stuff either. And when he got lost in Vegas, I knew he wasn't coming back. I just knew that he wasn't coming back. And I took an extra life insurance policy out that we had an option to do with children at a job that I was working at the time. And, you know, but for the grace of God, he came back, as you heard. But for the grace of God, he is sober today. But for the grace of God, he's a husband today. But for the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, he's going to be a dad in April. You know, that boy told me after one of the times in between sober, not sober, because he's tried a few times. He said, you know, I don't want to be a dad, Mom. I don't want to have kids because I don't want someone. I don't want a child that's going to turn out like me. Ah, that like ripped me out of my head. It's like, ah. I cannot wait to see him hold his baby for the first time. I'm going to share a spiritual story, and it's become part of my story because it's super important. Sam talked last night, too, about spiritual experiences, and, you know, this is one that is all God. There is no other reason other than why. You know, he was newly sober, and we had gone to a credit union to consolidate some loans that we had, and my husband had already been talking to her about, you know, what he does for a living. He works for the county of Riverside. You know, he's a behavior mental health specialist, but it's like a drug and alcohol counselor. That's who he works with, is parolees and alcoholics and addicts. And I don't know, this day she just decided to say, you know, you guys might know my brother. You know, he's in recovery and does meetings in Riverside. And she said his name. And man, I just felt this overwhelming emotional. I looked at my husband and I said, is that him? And he said, yes. And I started crying. And this poor lady across the room, she's like, here's some Kleenex. Are you okay? Did I say something wrong? And I said, no, sweetie, I'm going to tell you a story. I said, about 13 years ago, my husband wanted to bring home an alcoholic who needed a place to stay for the holidays. And I wouldn't let him do that, because he had brought other strays home and they had ripped us off. And I said, you can't do that anymore, but you can put them up in a hotel for the night, if you know, or even two if we've got the money. And I said, 13 years ago, my husband put an alcoholic in a hotel, and that person was your brother. And now your brother is sponsoring my son. That was so God telling me, Mom, I got him. Let go. You see, this program has told me that since the very beginning with all my loved ones. Let go. Get out of their way. Let go. Get out of their way. Lisa, try something new. Your life can't get any worse than it already is. All those things, you know, that I've been hearing. That one moment that I needed God to show up, he did, because I was worried he wasn't going to make it again one more time. And God showed up and said, that was just such the most overwhelming comfort, spiritual feeling, and I would have only felt that because of this program. I don't deviate from this program. I don't sugarcoat anything in this program. I'm very real and very honest and very transparent about my life. Anybody that knows me knows that about me, because no one sugarcoated it for me. Because this disease is cunning and baffling and just as deadly for us as it is the alcoholic. You cannot save your loved one. What you can do, and they said this to me when I was new, and I say this to new people that I sponsor as well. I can't promise you that your loved one's going to get sober, but I can promise you, if you do this deal and hold my hand, I'll walk this journey with you, and one day at a time, you will have a life for you bigger and better than you ever dreamed of, despite the disease of alcoholism. You can do this. I used to feel so guilty. I hate it. Happy, joyous, and free. It made me, when someone would say that, It was like, you know, nails on a chalkboard. I'm like, my kids are in the streets. I don't even know where they are. And you want me to be happy, joyous, and free? I had some few things to say behind that. I always had something to say behind that. I'm so grateful that I surrendered to a new way of life. Because I do have a new way of life today. Better than I ever thought I could. Because I suited up. At a certain point, I did shut up. And I listened and I took your direction. And my God, my life is amazing. It isn't perfect. But it's the best life that I've ever had. Because of, regardless of, what all these boys have done.